Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don. I can't even speak tonight. Don McGuire. We have a tremendous show for you tonight. We have some true veterans of the sport, and we have some tremendous up-and-comers. And, you know, this young man that we got on first, I looked at his career, and I realized I had to have him on the show. You know, there's a lot of fighters that are coming up in the sport, but there's very few that really capture my eye, and I really want to bring him on the show. And one of them happened to be Derek Brennan. And the reason why is the humility that he has, what he's doing in the sport, and where he comes from. You know, you put all of those things together, and you've got such a humble, tremendous young man, and it's my pleasure to bring him on the show. With that being said, Derek, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Don. I appreciate the opportunity to be on here.
Oh, it's the opportunity is actually, you know, I'm the one that's humbled, bro. You know, we were talking about it before we went live. You know, I kind of want to jump into things. As I told you, my show is not your stereotypical show. You know, a good friend of yours, Billy Patton, is also a good friend of mine. What did the years of you training with Billy Patton do for the career of Dirk? I can't even talk tonight, bro. I'm not feeling the greatest, but what did your years with Billy Patton do for Derek Brennan?
You know, Billy is a unique individual. He not only taught me a lot about fighting and boxing and specifically, but more about life and what he's gone through and where he's been, some of the slumps that he's been through. And I really took a lot from him and tried to apply that to my life outside the cage, you know, just to be a role model to other people, younger and older people as well. He's such a humble guy and a true warrior in the cage and outside the cage. And I was very, very pleased to work with him. He taught me the old Philly hook, you know, the stand up and because he's from Philly, and he's just a great guy to work with. We hit it off the first day in the gym, and, you know, hopefully we cross paths again. I've trained with him down in Coconut Creek, Florida, American Top Team down there. And, I learned a lot from him.
Yeah, it must be something in the water in Philly because even, you know, I do a boxing show and even the tremendous individuals that I bring from the Sweet Science on the show, you know, such as when I brought Billy on way back, you know, they just, I don't know, there's something different about them. It must be the water, you know. But then you jump over to Colorado and you jump into training with, in my opinion, probably one of the best coaches that exists today in the sport, and that being Mark Montoya. What led you to Factory X?
I was actually visiting a buddy of mine. His name's Hung Muhammad, and he helps me with my dieting as well. He owns a online dieting program. It's called SoBoss.co. And I was visiting him. I came out to Colorado for a week, and I, you know, after a few days of being out here, I started getting stiff, and I'm a gym rat. I like going to the gym, and I like working out all the time. I like being in good shape. So I asked him, I said, do you know of any MMA gyms around here? And he went to church with Mark Montoya and a few other guys at the gym. And he said, yeah, let's go check out Factory X. So we went over there. I threw my gear on and got on the mat, and I got my ass whooped. before release, Marcus Edwards and Jordan Tatone, I sparred with both of those guys, and I got my ass kicked. And, you know, after I left that gym, I just couldn't shake it. You know, I was like, man, it's bugged me. You know, I don't like to be bested. And those guys, you know, they had no problem besting me, especially on my feet. And, you know, I went back to Florida, and I went back down to train with those guys. And I don't know, I just had this calling, you know. I felt like this, you know, Factory X was where I needed to be to get to that next level. And I was right. You know, I made a smart choice, moving out here and training with Mark Montoya. He is a guru in the stand up and, you know, all around MMA, just guru. He's coached, I believe, a few world champions, with Joe Warren. He's got Chris Camozzi, Brian Camozzi, those guys. They were in the UFC, and now Chris Camozzi's got his debut coming up for Glory. And I'm just really happy with the decision I made. You know, it was a satisfying decision when I got out here. You know, I felt right at home, and you know, I made quick friends with everybody at the gym. It's such a welcoming gym. It's a very family-based gym. You know, you feel like they're your brothers and sisters in there that you're training on the mat with. And it's just, you know, looking back on it, I'm super happy that I made that decision.
Well, anybody would be, bro. I mean, you look at it, and even if you just look at the scenario, you were defined for the sport. I mean, first you start out with you know, America top team down there in Florida, and then you end up at Factory X, two of the top gyms in the country. You know, so, mm-hmm. you know, that right there already should tell you you're destined for greatness. I mean, you have two of the best, you know, striking coaches in the business, you know, on your side. You know, it kind of reminds me of the Cortez Coleman story. As I was telling you before we went live, we had to pull a prank on Mark Montoya to get him on the show. We told him we were going to do a show that would get people drawn into Factory X, and I brought a bunch of the fighters on, and we paid homage to Mark Montoya because he truly is a true aspect to the sport. And it kind of leads me into my next question. You know, there was a picture that you posted after your last fight with Carmo, and, you know, I put a statement on that picture that you couldn't even put words to that picture. What is it, when you sat back after that fight and you looked at the picture with you and Mark Montoya, what went through the mind? Whoa, I can't even talk tonight, bro. See, I'm sitting here with a torn hamstring, honest with you.
Oh,
but,
man.
Well, yeah, it's not doing too good. But what went through the mind of Eric Brennan that when you had that moment to sit back and reflect and look at that picture?
Yeah, man, that picture, it really brings, it captures the emotion that goes in, you know, between a fighter and a coach before you step in that octagon. You know, me and Mark, we put a lot of time in the gym, and he's a coach that I want to win for. And I can't say that, you know, throughout my career, I've had, you know, maybe one or two coaches that I really, really wanted to win for. You know, obviously I go out there to win every single time, and I want to go out there and win for myself, but to even to have that feeling where you want to go out and you want to make a statement for Factory X and Mark Montoya and put him on the mat, which he already is on the map, but I want to be what that fighter that can go to that world championship under Mark Montoya as well. You know, when I first got to Factory X, he told everybody in the gym, he goes, you know, in the next 5 years, I want five world champions. Who's going to be my five? And it, you know, that stuck with me. I want to be one of those five world champions that he's going to coach. And I think that picture captures it perfectly. You know, I'm always nervous going in there, but with Mark Montoya and the rest of my coaches and Factory X behind me, I'm not nervous at all. I know that I'm very well prepared. You know, we put a lot of work in the gym, hours and hours and hours, just going over certain situations, what we would do in this situation, what we would do in that situation. And I know that I'm more than well prepared stepping in the octagon and facing whoever I got to face, you know, at that time.
Well, you know, I kind of want to take you back to your last fight with Carmo. You know, you went in, you had a tremendous outing, you're undefeated as of yet. You know, when you sit back and you look from start to finish where you've come from, Derek, what would you say would be your greatest takeaway, whether it be from your coach, in the cage, or in the gym? What do you feel has defined you the most?
You know, I'm one of those guys that that goes to the gym, and I give 120% every single day. Anytime that I go in there, I leave a better individual, a better fighter, you know, just a better all-around person. That's what my college coach, Ithaca College coach Marty Nichols, he had a saying, you know, 1% better every single day. Be that 1% better every single day, and after a while, that 1% adds up and adds up and it adds up, and that's something that I took away from wrestling in college, was just to each day try to be better than the last. And I would say, you know, I've taken that and used it in wrestling. I've used it in judo. I've used it in jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, boxing, all of them. And I've also used it in my life. You know, I was a somewhat of a troubled kid, especially in college. You know, I goofed off. I could have been a national champion if I wanted to be, but I was too busy, you know, partying and doing all the wrong things. And I learned from that, and I think that if you can be better every single day than the last, then you're destined for greatness. Good things are going to come your way. And I think that that's something that that's going to be something that I live by for the rest of my life.
I love that because, you know, it reminds me of a show I did with Juan Archuleta. You know, here you have an individual that was, you know, he had a wrestling scholarship. He ends up getting in a little bit of trouble and has to go away to jail for a year. And then he gets this moment in the sport, and in 3 short years he becomes a 7-time world champion, a 4-time division champion, and 4 different weight classes. You know, we don't let the atrocities in our life define us, and that's what I'm understanding from you. You know, if you look back at our weakest moments, those are the moments that make the greatest moments of our life, because you take that time that you say, you know, you wanted to party, you wanted to do this. You know, we all have those days. We all look at life and we have regrets, but, you know, is what we learn from those regrets and what we take away from them is truly what defines us. Now, when you look at your record as an amateur and as a pro, you're 13-0. I mean, so obviously you took away a great deal away from, you know, your childhood and growing up. What type of young man was Derek Brennan before he even stepped into the sport or even thought about the cage?
I grew up in a small town, Watertown, New York. Everyone knows everybody, you know, I had a good following in wrestling. I grew up on a farm. I know the meaning of hard work. I helped my grandpa milk cows and throw hay during the summer. And, you know, I helped a couple other farmers as well that were close by. So I definitely know the meaning of hard work. And I think that, you know, I carried that with me my entire life. I'm just a goer, you know, I'm a go-getter. I don't sit back and let things pass by. You know, if an opportunity comes my way, I take it. And my family, you know, my family's really, really close to me. I grew up on we all lived on the same road, and you know, I'm definitely more of a homebody, you know, staying at home and just trying to do all the right things and just be the person that you know, that I wanted to be, that I saw myself being, which is a good person. And you know, like I said, I got sidetracked in college with all the drinking and the partying and the girls chasing women, and it was, you know, it was a good learning experience. I'm glad that I went through that, and I'm glad that I wasn't a national champion, because I think that, you know, my MMA career is going to be my redemption for that. I just think that, you know, I'm so focused right now. And like I said, I moved from New York down to American Top Team for a year, trained down there. I moved back home because I knew I wanted to go out to Factory X. I sacrificed a whole year of fighting. Took a whole year off. I worked for a paving crew, working, you know, 16, 17, 18-hour days some days. I was making really, really good money. Just, you know, putting my nose to the grind and, you know, I had that goal of moving out here to Factory X. I needed to bank up a bunch of money. And, you know, I made that sacrifice, and now I'm here doing what I'm doing, you know. And I'm very grateful for everything and all the support that I've had, you know, leading up to this point. And I'm just going to continue to rise from here.
Most definitely. I mean, if anybody goes and looks at any footage of you or even just follows you just a little bit on social media, they can see the plight that you're on, and it's tremendous, you know. And we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. You know, first America Top Team, Factory X, you know, not very many individuals in life get these opportunities. You know, what do these opportunities mean to you, Derek, going forward in life? I mean, you've got some of the best training. You already mentioned you want to be one of those top five. What is Derek Brennan willing to do to get there?
You know, I'm willing to sacrifice everything. You know, any fighter that steps in the cage is sacrificing a lot, and you know, I'm willing to die in there. This is what I love to do. You know, if I was, I've always lived by, you know, if I'm gonna go out, I want to go out doing something that I love, and I'm willing to sacrifice everything. I left my family, I left my nephew that was back in New York. I moved away. Like I said, I'm definitely a homebody. I like my family, and I like hanging out with my family. And I sacrificed that, you know, and to move across the country, I think that says a lot. I've done it twice, you know, and not many people are willing to sacrifice everything that they got in order to pursue something, especially, you know, going after a world title. It's quite the feat, and I think I got what it takes. You know, I got the work ethic, I got the motivation, I got the drive, I got the determination to do it, and it's just a matter of putting in the time, putting in the work on the mat, and like I said, getting better 1% every day.
You know, I want to take you back to when I had Cortez Coleman on the show, and Mark Montoya happened to be on this show, and we kind of went a little in depth on a story. And you know, Cortez is kind of an outspoken person in life. He really doesn't walk to the beat of anybody's drum. And he said the first time that he had a tiff with Mark Montoya was the time that he realized that Mark Montoya was going to be his coach for the rest of his life, you know. And I just sit back and I laugh about it, because he said, you know, he got in Mark's face and said, you know, if you think you can do it, we can get up in the cage and blah, blah, blah. And Mark said, we'll get some gloves on. And Cortez said, I had to take a step back, bro. He said, you know, here I am, I'm talking all this crap, and all Mark did was just look at me and said, okay, we'll get a pair of gloves on, let's go. He said, at that point in
called
time.
Called his
bluff. He goes, at that point in time, I said that Montoya was the real deal. When you have those one-on-one moments with Mark Montoya, what do you take away most, and what stays in the heart and the mind of Derek Brennan after those sessions?
You know, I actually kind of had a similar situation with Mark. I've moved out here. I'm training full-time. I do not have a job. This is what I do full-time. I train 2 to 3 times a day, 6 days a week. And I had trouble finding fights. Guys were backing out, you know, getting hurt and stuff like that. And I was out here for almost 6 months before I got my first fight, and money was tight. And I told him, you know, I have an opportunity to go back to New York and make some good money again. You know, I can come back out after that. And he sat me down. I'll never forget it. He sat me down and he said, listen, you did the hard part already. You are out here. Why would you take 2 steps back? You know, that doesn't make any sense. And I left that conversation kind of irritated. Understand, like, that I need money to live, and I was a little flustered, you know, and I went out back home and I slept on it, and I woke up that next morning, and I remember, like, saying to myself, you know, Mark Montoya really cares about me. He's not going to let me leave because he sees my potential and what I can do and where I'm going, and just because, you know, money's a little tight or whatever, he's not going to let me back out from what I've already accomplished and what I'm already doing. And that, to me, right there, shows me that he truly cares about me and truly cares about my success and wants to see me succeed. And there's not very many people out there that want to see other people succeed, especially when, you know, like I said, I was only here, you know, maybe 6 months. So it wasn't like I was training under Mark for a few years or anything like that. I can really feel the emotion that Mark gives to his fighters. And it's not just me, it's every single one of our fighters that we got in there. You know, he focuses, he takes time out of his busy day to work with us one-on-one, you know, whenever we need it. And that's a coach that's something that I look for in a coach. And he also holds us accountable. And I think that's very important, you know, looking for a coach as well. Some of these, you know, some coaches, you know, they don't care if you show up a little bit late or whatever to a missed session. Not Mark Montoya, man. You better be on time or 10 minutes early, 15 minutes early, warming up, getting ready. You know, he holds his fighters accountable. And to me, that shows that he really, really cares, truly cares about what we're doing in our success.
You know, I have to agree with you because I'm Glory MMA and Fitness's gym photographer, and you know I have the dealings with Krause and Tim Elliott and Zach Cummings, and they all go out there, and you know it's tremendous when you see all these relevant fighters in the world calling Mark Montoya coach, even though they have their own gyms and this and that. They consider him their main guy. You know, having that opportunity is a privilege, you know, for most of these fighters, considering yourself. You know, I kind of want to take you back a little bit to the Carmo fight. Out of all of your fights, I believe it's the only fight that, I could be wrong, but I believe it's your only fight that, no, I am wrong. It's your second fight that went to a unanimous decision. You know,
yep.
When you look back at the fight with Carmo, how mad were you at yourself that you let it go to the score? Because, bro, you're tremendous on the ground. You've got a tremendous striking and submission game. You know, what do you feel that you didn't do that night that you sat back later on and reflected on?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because the first thing I asked my jiu-jitsu coach, Professor Busy, and I asked him, I said, why did that guy not go to sleep, or why did he not, what was I doing wrong? And it was a little tiny factor. All I had to do was roll my shoulders back and pop my chest out. And he said that he would either have tapped or gone to sleep. Just those little teeny tiny key factors, techniques. Those little things are what separate, you know, I'm only a blue belt in jiu-jitsu. I've been doing it for a long time, but I've trained under a lot of professors, so I've never really built it up. But, you know, I'm still constantly, like I said, I'm always trying to learn, always trying to get better, and I won't make that mistake again. I'm glad it went the distance, to be honest with you, to prove to me and other people, because, you know, when you're finishing people all the time, you know, it sits back in my mind, you know, what happens when I do go the distance? Am I going to have the gas to make it in that third round? Am I going to have the heart to make it in that third round? You know, I remember going, getting off the stool, going into that third round, being like, man, I'm tired. I can barely lift my arms. You know, I remember the doubt starting to creep in into my mind, you know, do I have what it takes to finish this round? And I think that it just shows how mentally tough that was. You know, I cracked down, I pulled, I did get, I got rocked a little bit with an uppercut at the beginning of that third round, but I went right back to my instincts. You know, I wrestled, got him down, started controlling him, and then, you know, finished out the round with a controlled position, doing damage, still trying to get the finish, you know. And, yeah, I just think, like I said, I try to get better every single day, and I will, if I get the back of somebody and then rear naked choke that deep again, I will put them to sleep or I'll finish it, or they'll tap for sure.
Yeah, I was amazed that he didn't go to sleep. But, you know, you don't know this unless you ask you, because you define these little things that, you know, people can't see. And I try to explain this to people all the time. You know, you got people in the crowd that, let's take a ref, for example. They said the ref did a horrible call. Well, first of all, you've got a different view than what I do as a photographer. And then the ref has a different view because he's in there. He's watching both fighters. He's trying to protect both fighters. And, you know, so I would never want to be in the ref shoes first and foremost, but everybody has a different view. But when it comes time to look at a fight, everybody's got their own opinion when they really don't know, because they can't define it. They weren't in the ref shoes. They weren't in the cage. They didn't have that look. And you even have more of a defined
right.
view as a fighter. And so, you know, you got to critique yourself in those manners, and only you can do that. You know, Derek, when you sit back and you look at the path that you chose in life, and you're a well-defined young man, you've got a great, great future ahead of you in this sport. When you look at the path that you chose, what would you say would be the most heartfelt reflection for you moving forward?
You know, MMA is a very self-sacrificing sport. You have to really put everything on the line You know, you're stepping in there in the cage. It's just you and one other guy. And, you know, in a crowd of sometimes 5,000 to 100,000 people and not and even more watching on TV. And, you know, I think that when you put yourself out there like that, you know, things can go wrong, things can go right. But at the end of the day, you just got to be happy with yourself. You got to be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, you know what, I've done everything in my power to prepare myself to get ready for this guy, you know, whoever it is. And to me, that's one of the hardest things to do, and especially in the sport, man. I mean, yeah, we're getting punched in the face, but to just put yourself out there, you know, to put yourself at risk. I think that not very many people are willing to do that in life in general. Not many people like taking risks because, you know, there's no guarantee. You know, there's no guarantee in life. And MMA has really shown me that, you know, if you work hard, you put in the time, and you're good, you're a good person, and I believe in karma. You know, I try to help people who are in need, and even if they aren't in need, you know, I'm trying to help them. I go back home, and my dad is a Pee Wee coach. I go back home, and I see all these young kids, and I can remember being in their shoes, you know, and I try to be that role model to them and just give them all the right advice. You know, some of the advice that I never got of, you know, you're in this practice room for 1 hour. Give it everything you got for that 1 hour so you can, you know, leave there better than when you first went in there. And to be able to be that figure for those young kids is that, to me, you know, the wins, the money, the belts, that's all nice and everything. But to be that role model, that's what I really enjoy about this. You know, it gives me a platform to speak and let people hear what, you know, what I've learned in my life. And still learning, you know, I'm still a kid myself, but, you know, I've been through a lot of stuff and I've learned a lot. And, you know, if I can pass that knowledge on to other people, that's to me is more important than all the money, all the things, if I can be that role model for people, that's what I really enjoy the most from MMA.
You know, I commend you on that because in my 21 years in this business, you know, I've shot UFC, for the UFC, Bellator, Invicta, several other promotions. I got my start in boxing with HBO and Showtime. The thing that stands out for me in my career, and it's funny, I've got tons of awards, but the only two awards that I have out, one is a belt that I got from the Golden Gloves when I shot them. The kids gave me a belt, and then another youth event that I did for USA Boxing, they confronted me with an award, which was another belt. Those are the only two awards that I keep out of my closet that truly mean the most to me. And I can see that aspect mm-hmm. in you, and it's a tremendous aspect that, you know, to have, to be able to give back and care about the future of the sport. And, you know, I commend you on that because that's how we keep things going in life, and that says testaments about who you are as a man. You know, Derek, I'm truly honored you came on the show tonight. I apologize. 3 days ago, I slipped and I fell, and I actually pulled some of the hamstring and the tendon away from the bone. And
ooh,
that's why I'm kind of not in the best position tonight, kind of sitting on a real soft seat. But,
man. Make sure you ice that.
Friend, yeah, oh, I've been icing and heat, bro, and it doesn't help, nor do the muscle relaxers.
Oh, man.
But you're a tremendous athlete and a great young man in life. I think you got a tremendous future. You're definitely with one of the best coaches that there, you know, you could be with in my mind, in my opinion. I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. If you could give a statement to your fans, to my listeners, about what they can expect from Derek Brennan in the future, what would that statement be?
Listen, guys, you know, I take a lot of pride in being humble. I don't have much of a trash talk mouth on me, and I know a lot of people tune in to see, you know, all the drama and stuff like that. So, you know, I don't know if you'll see the trash talk out of me. I'm a very humble person. I grew up in a humble home, and But you're gonna see championships won, and you're gonna see me giving back, to the community, me giving back to the sport, youth. Whether it's wrestling camps, motivational speaking, you know, that's something that I've always been interested in, and just helping other, you know, helping people just better themselves. Like I said, that 1% a day, man, that's something that I live by. And if I can pass that on to one person, you know, if I can help just one person, you know, I'm happy. I'm doing my job. And I do have a fight coming up November 18th versus Justin Gonzalez for Spartan Combat League. That's going to be for the 145-pound championship belt. Look for fireworks in that one, man. We're both undefeated. He's a tough opponent. He's a really humble guy too. I respect him. We've exchanged words back and forth. You know, we were both looking forward to this fight. Finally happened. So tune into that, guys. November 18th, Sparta Combat League. Look for my hand getting raised.
It's gonna be a hell of a war. That is a good fight, bro. That is a really good fight.
Great fight.
You know. It truly was an honor to have you on. At this point in time, Derek, what I'm going to do, and I'll have you back on again before your fight when I'm feeling the better side of the interview. But I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. Any sponsors, any friends or family, any social media sites, or just anything you would like to add to the program, the floor is yours, Derek.
Awesome, man. Thank you, Don. I appreciate it very much. Like I said, this is an awesome opportunity. I look forward to getting back on here and chatting with you again. I want to thank my sponsors, Rick Martin, Caprera Brothers Honda back in Watertown, New York, Maggie's on the River, Landau Performance, my strength and conditioning coaches, obviously Factory X, Mark Montoya, all the coaches there, all my training partners. I know I'm going to forget. Turp House, based out of California, CBD oil, that's the best stuff. If you actually Don, you might want to look into that. It helps with joint pain relief. I use it on a daily basis to help recover from training practices and stuff like that. Super important. There's based out of a hemp plant, and there's no THC or anything. It's strictly legal because I know we have to pass drug tests and everything. So, Chirp House, let's see. I want to thank my mom and dad because without them, I wouldn't even be here. They're actually out here in Colorado with me right now. They're visiting, and I love them very much. My brother and my sister and my nephew, and all the PB wrestlers back home in Watertown, New York. Give a shout out to them because they're working hard right now. So yeah, man, I appreciate the opportunity of coming on here. Like I said, I look forward to doing it again.
Oh, you and me both, my friend, because you truly are the future of the sport. I like having humble warriors like yourself on my show because it reinstills faith that not everybody has that Connor-esque attitude, and us old-timers really don't appreciate that. We respect fighters like you. Keep doing what you're doing, my friend, and you enjoy the night with your family, and I look forward to having you back on the show again. It truly was an honor.
Awesome, Don. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you, buddy. God bless.
Thanks, man. Have a good one.
You too. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Derek Brennan, a tremendous young man. I apologize. I did tear my hamstring away from the bone as well as part of the tendon, but the show must go on, and we're going to bring on Christina Warhorse Williams right now.
Hello?
Hi, Christina. This is Don McGuire with the Fighter's Voice. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. How about you?
Well, I could be doing a little bit better. I tore my hamstring the other day. I had a little bit of separation from the bone, so just a little bit.
Oh, no. That's horrible.
I know. Me and Derek Brennan, we were just talking about it, and it's not a very nice injury, and, you know, so.
No.
You got news coming up, you know, I got in correlation with your management. You're a tremendous young fighter, and you got an opportunity of a lifetime coming up against Heather Hardy. What does this mean for you, Christina, to be able to step up, make your debut against Heather Hardy for Bellator?
Well, I mean, it's a huge thing. I didn't expect to get a fight like that for my pro debut. So, I think it's incredible. And I'm ready for the challenge.
She said, I'm ready for the challenge. You know, when you sit back and you initially got that phone call, you know, I don't know where you were. Nobody does. I don't know if it came via your management or through Bellator. But when you first initially got that call, how did it affect you? Did you sit back? Did you scream? Did you go, holy crap? What were the thoughts going through your head when you got that call initially?
It was pretty much, I was pretty overwhelmed. I didn't expect to get something like that. I was like, whoa, this is really big. But, I mean, I was so excited. And that, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll kind of fool everybody in here. You know, you're not a slouch of a fighter, so you deserve this tremendous, you know, opportunity as a pro debut with Heather Hardy. You look at your three amateur fights that are listed, and, you know, it's nothing to look back ahead and go, you know, this girl has nothing. When you look back at the beginning of your fight career, there's no need to be nervous on my show. Trust me, this is a laid-back hippie show, family show, whatever you want to call it. This show is for you guys, not me. It's for my listeners and for your fans. But when you got initially started as an amateur, what were your initial thoughts about the sport? What initially brought you into the octagon? Because, you know, I bring on a lot of women fighters, and each and every one of their answers is different. But what initially led you to the octagon?
Well, I started out as Thai fighting. That was my very first fight. And I sort of just, like, I wasn't sure if I wanted to fight that much yet or not, but I sort of wanted to see what I had when I got in the ring. And I fell in love with it after my first fight. Like, when I get in the ring, I mean, there's nothing like it. I have focus. I'm a completely different person when I get in the ring. I fell in love with it. Being able to stop. So kept going. I did some fights and some kickboxing fights, and then like this year that I took my first MMA fight.
Having just a little hard time hearing you. I don't know if you're on a Bluetooth or not, but having just a little hard time hearing you. You know, but what initially took you, because I'm a traditionalist and I love Muay Thai, and I just initially got a contract with Lion Fights to bring their fighters on the show. What initially took you from that traditional aspect of the sport, wanting to you know, get into the cage fighting aspect of it? Because I've had, you know, black belts that are the greatest in the world in jiu-jitsu. I've had some of the most profound fighters in Muay Thai on the show. What was it in your life that drew you to the cage away from Muay Thai?
Well, initially I wanted to be like a pro Thai fighter, and that's, I mean, I love stand-up. Stand-up is one of my favorite things to do, but I really was trying to get another fight, and so I took my first MMA fight, and I found that I really, really enjoyed it too, and so I kept on going, but like I fell in love with MMA because I like having all the aspects of fighting there together.
You know, stepping in the octagon with Heather Hardy is going to be a tremendous outing for you. When you look at this fight that's getting ready to come up, and you just got that one moment, you sit back and you look into the future, you know, what do you realize or how do you feel in your heart knowing that you're getting ready for probably the biggest fight of your career to date?
Well, I mean, I'm a little nervous, but I'm also super excited. Like, I know I have a lot of work to do, but I'm doing the work, and I'm really excited.
You can tell, my friend. You know what? You know, Christina, what was life like for you as a young child growing up, and what initially, you know, because I know, like you said, you did Muay Thai, and there was probably other athletics that you were involved with. What initially drew you to the athletic side, or was it just something that was a spur of the moment thought?
Well, growing up, I grew up on like 165 acres. We had horses and cows, and I still ride horses. But pretty much my brother is who got me into fighting. He was going to a boxing gym. So I basically started doing like the cardio classes with him when I was 12. And I kept doing that for a couple years. And then when I was 16, I started doing Taekwondo. And I did that for 5 years, and I got my black belt. And so I took off for a while, or a couple years after that, and I went to college. And after I graduated, I moved up here to Edmond, and my brother was looking for a new MMA gym because he was a pro fighter. And I started when he did, but I just was doing like the Muay Thai for a long time at first, and he finally talked me into doing the Jiu-Jitsu part, which I fell in love with too. So that's basically how I got into MMA.
You know, I truly am a traditionalist, and it's one thing my listeners are probably going, not this again, but you know, one thing that I love about Jiu-Jitsu fighters is that these people purely do it for really no glory, no money, no nothing. It's a true passion. Would you say that the traditionalist passion in you has truly defined you so you can make this breakout moment in the octagon?
Yeah, I mean it's not like anything else. I just do it because I love it. I guess you can say that.
You like beating people up, come on, admit it.
Yeah, I mean, kind of.
I got to give you a bad time, you know, because, you know, first and foremost, my show is, yeah, there's a lot of listeners, and that's what people like about it. But it's just me and you, we're just like we're two friends on the front porch having a pop, you know, no reason to be nervous. I'm nobody special, trust me. I'm just a guy that takes pictures and interviews fighters and just look at it in that aspect, and you don't have to worry about it. Just say, God, I got 20 more minutes with this clown, and then I'll be done with him. No, I'm just giving you a bad time. you know, when we look at life, there's a lot of things that make us who we are. You know, when we look back, you know, over our shoulder, and we look at the path that we walked, or we get that reflection in the mirror, and, you know, it really helps guide us along, you know, in life. What would you say was the most defining moment that made you realize not only who you are as a person, but where you wanted to go with your life, whether it was the cage or whether it was another aspect?
As far as, like, my fighting, I mean, when I first stepped into, like, my first fight, I knew that was something I loved and I wanted to pursue. But, I mean, as far as, like, my faith is one of the things that really holds me together and drives me forward, and I think that I can do anything that's possible because of my faith in God. And I think that He blessed me with this ability, and it's something that I think that I should use and see where I can go with it.
Now, you mentioned you kind of come from a big farm and kind of a tremendous young childhood. You know, what are the thoughts of your parents, you know, when you mentioned your brother kind of led you into this, but what were the thoughts of your parents when you initially told them that this is what you wanted to do, this is the avenue that you wanted to take in life?
My mom was not super excited about it. Like, she really supports me now, but she wasn't very happy about it when I first started. But I mean, everybody has been really supportive of me when I decided this is what I wanted to do.
You know, it's weird because, you know, when I first got started in this business, you know, it was like, probably I'd say 7-8 years ago, we started to try to remove the W from WMMA because in my heart, I don't think any fighter should be categorized. I don't think there should be a W in front of, you know, MMA. I think anybody that steps in an octagon, a ring, or on a mat should just be truly defined as a fighter. Because, I mean, you go a step in, you know, a step above, you know, the norm in life. Most people are content with the 9-to-5. They come home, they shut the garage, they close the blinds, and that's life for them. You know, what is it that inspires you to continue to grow? Now you got this day in Bellator. So what, when you look back, what is that inspiration, other than what we've talked about, that truly has you wanting to grow and become more of a pertinent or relevant person in this sport?
I mean, I really just want to, like, grow as an individual and, like, be an example for other women who want to fight. It doesn't matter, like, where you came from, or I think there's, like, a stereotype that, like, certain women are only going to be fighters. But I think if you have that passion, like, anybody, like, any woman can be fighters. And it's not just, they're not, I mean, they're fighters. They're not just women. I just want to, like, show people that no matter where you come from, you can be a fighter.
You know, when you look at your fight name, Warhorse, you know, a lot of people come up with these silly names, but it, you know, I look at that name, Warhorse, and to me, you know, after speaking with you and kind of getting a little feel for who you are in life, I think there's a meaning to that. What initially, or how initially did you come up with, you know, Warhorse? Because I think it's something that's a little bit deeper in your heart than most people think.
Well, I mean, it was sort of like my manager and my fight team came up with the name for me, because, like, they know me and my personality and, like, also how much I love horses, and I work with them all the time. So, I mean, that's basically how we came up with my fight name. It was other people and what they thought about me as a person.
You know, when you look at your management company, and they're tremendous individuals, I think they're doing great things, and I think you're in tremendous hands with TKO. You know, moving into this Bellator fight, how gratifying or how much respect or how much knowledge have they instilled in you in preparing you for this fight with Heather Hardy?
I mean, so much. I mean, they've been amazing this whole time. Like, I'm so grateful to have them as my management and my fight team. I mean, I've got so much more to learn from them, but, I mean, they've really been teaching me so much.
You know, I think it's tremendous that you get this opportunity. Not only is this your pro debut, but it's also on the, I think it's the first fight that Gegard Mousasi is going to be on Bellator. You know, so
yeah,
it's going to be a hell of a card. I can see why you'd be just a little bit nervous. You know, I think I'd be nervous.
Yeah.
You know, you get out there and you go, okay, you know, I've had these amateur fights, and, you know, and I know what it's like to get hit. I know what it's like to do the walkout. And then here you get your pro debut, and it's on the same night that Gegard Mousasi is coming out for Bellator. You know, I had a fighter one time that when Fedora was supposed to fight in San Jose, and he was making his pro debut on that card. And when he found out that Fedora was pulled off that card, he was like, I don't even want to fight now, man. You know, I don't even
yeah.
fight. That's the only reason I took this. But, you know, this is a fight that can propel you into superstardom. Just the card alone, you know, with your ability is tremendous. And now you've got this huge opportunity. And I know we look at things like that and we go, man, I'm nervous, I'm scared, you know, or you get these thoughts that, you know, you don't want to share with anybody. But when you get that opportunity and you sit back and, you know, and I use this question a lot because I love the analogy, because everybody's answer is different. You know, when you know, after you got that call and you walked by a mirror, or you looked down in a puddle of water on the walkway, or you looked at your reflection in the lake or whatever it may be, you know, what do you see moving forward into this fight?
I mean, so far my focus has just been on the fight. I haven't thought a whole lot about, like, what happens afterwards. I'm, like, completely focused on winning the fight. But, I mean, it's win or lose, I'm not going to stop. I don't even know, like, what to think about what would happen afterwards, because it's just such a new idea.
Well, if I can ever teach you one thing, it will never be, you know, no matter how the fight comes out, win or lessen, you know, one thing I like to instill in younger fighters is you never lose. You always get taught a lesson. And James Krause taught me that. You know, he did an interview and they asked him what it's like to be 22-7. He said, "I'm not 22-7, I'm 22-0 with 7 lessons learned." You know, because anybody that steps up in an octagon can never be a loser. Anybody that steps up in a ring or on the mat can never be a loser. So always keep that close and dear to your heart, because what you're doing is tremendous. You're going out there, you're creating a life for you, and you're living your dream. And how can that ever be a loss? You can't lose when you're gaining. You know, if I could ever teach you one thing in life, let it be that. You know, one thing I always like to ask fighters that come on my show, because I like to share who you are away from the sport, and, you know, what is it that brightens up your day? What is it that warms your heart away from the sport that truly makes a difference in your life and helps you make a difference in the world, Christina?
Well, working a lot with horses, I get to work with a lot of kids. And I have a lot of kids come out that are, like, from Neighborhoods in Action or, like, the inner-city kids. So one of the things that's, like, my favorite thing is introducing a kid to a horse for the first time when it's never been around them. There's just something amazing about it. And that's just something that I love doing. Apart from the MMA, that's one of the things that I do.
Now, when you sit back and you look at your whole life as a whole, you know, you've come very far. I mean, you come from a ranch and you work with horses, you give back to the community. You've done a lot in such a short period of time. Who would you say would be the person behind that giving heart in Christina Williams?
What would I say, who I am?
No, I said, who would you say is the person behind that giving heart in yourself?
Oh, I mean, probably my mom. Like, growing up, she, like, was there for me all the time. I think probably she's probably my biggest hero.
I like that, you know, because a lot of times people in life, you know, and being in this sport, they don't really look at the pertinent factors in life. And, you know, to hear you say your mom is a tremendous attribute, because, you know, I had a fighter at one time. I said, you know, you're 5-0 and you've had this tremendous run, and you look at your life, who would you give credit to? And she said, nobody. And, you know, I'm 51 years old. I could be a jerk sometimes, trust me. And it kind of threw me for a loop, and I kind of got mad. And I was like, I had a co-host at the time, and I was like, you know, she better say something or I'm fitting to go sideways on her, because, you know, no matter, you know, where you are at in life, there's always somebody that you could give credit to. And for you to say your mom is a tremendous attribute, you know, I love the aspect that you give back to kids. I love the aspect that you love helping people and that your mom truly has instilled a lot in you. You know, it's up to you to take what your parents give you and move forward in life. Now you've got all these opportunities in front of you. You've got a tremendous career in front of you. What does everything, when you look back, What was that one special moment that you hold near and dear in your heart now when you get to look at everything that you've accomplished, everything that you've got going for you right now? What is that one special moment that will always remain that special moment to you?
Just like my first, like first stepping into like my first fight, like that's when everything came together for me. I guess it doesn't seem like a lot, but like just the feeling of that first fight and knowing what I accomplished by winning my first fight, like it just really, it's really stuck with me. Just like the sense that I had of accomplishment after I did that.
Yeah, and of course you're talking about the Kleinbeck fight, you know, and I kind of watched a little bit of footage on that, and, you know, you won by submission, forward/punches that fight, but I seen a tremendous young lady that stepped up in an octagon and wanted to prove something to herself, wanted to prove something to the people that backed her, and you truly did, and you've had a sensational career thus far. I mean, it's a very, very new career, and you've got this tremendous opportunity. You know, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you, and if there was a statement you could make to the people that helped you get this far in your career, and let them know how thankful you are for giving you the faith, the knowledge, the ability that they instilled in you, what would that statement be, Christina?
Pretty much thank you, and I love you so much. You meant so much in my life, like all the people who have supported me, like my family and my teammates. Like, thank you so much, and it, like, your support means so much to me.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to have you on the show more because we're going to have to break you of that nervousness.
Well, yeah. Like, fighting, getting in the ring, it's nothing to me, but, like, public speaking has always been the hardest thing I've ever done. So I guess fighting's helping with that, too.
Hey, well, that's okay, my friend. I could speak on the radio, and I've had some of the best fighters in the world on my show. But yet you put me in front of a crowd and hand me a microphone, it's not happening. It is,
yeah.
Just not happening. I don't know. I would rather be the man in the darkness creating greatness for others than trying to put myself in the spotlight. You know?
Yeah.
If you had to make a statement about what the fans can expect come Bellator 185 when you step in the octagon with Heather Hardy, what will that statement be? And I know you don't talk crap, and I'm not expecting you to talk crap because my show don't roll that way. But if you had to make a statement, what would it be?
It's going to be a fight, and I'm going to give it everything I have. I'm not the kind of person that backs down. I'm gonna do everything I can to win.
You know, one more question before we wrap things up. You know, this fight right here can truly propel you into the sport as a warrior, as a person that is defined by their abilities. You know, what do you think will be the greatest takeaway for you should this fight go your way?
I think just having gotten there and pushed myself to the level that I'm pushing myself right now, I think just it's just learning, like the discipline that I have to have and the determination that I have to have. I think the accomplishment from that is like going to be the biggest takeaway that I get. Just my, like the hard work that I do paying off.
Yes. Well, you truly have deserved this opportunity in Bellator. You know, Scott Coker, Rich Cho, Ian Matthews, Jed Thornton. They're all tremendous individuals in the sport. You know, this organization happens to be one of my favorite organizations out there. And, you know, a lot of people ask me why. And, my friend, you will soon find out that it's so family based. It's so fighter friendly. It's just, you'll have to experience this night coming up, you know, because you'll take away more memories from this night than you will from any other fight in your career thus far, because the family aspect that Bellator brings to the sport is tremendous. You've got a hell of a management company. You've got a hell of a training staff. You know, I think this is your night to shine, and I think it will be. You know, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. If there's any friends, family, any social media sites, or anything else that you would just like to add to the program, the floor is yours, my friend.
I just want to say thanks to my team at American Elite MMA, and just thanks to my family who are listening right now. I love you, and shout out to my manager at Trigger KO Combat Sports, Mikhail. Thank you so much, and I think that's it.
Yeah, we're going to have you on more and more so we can get you not to be so green on the show. Trust me, my friend, I'm nobody special. But you could tell you were just a little bit nervous tonight. Come on, you'll just be a little bit more relaxed because you'll have that fight underneath your belt. I look forward to bringing you back on, actually, after you fight Heather Hardy. I love bringing on fighters from your, you know, management group, as they truly – one thing I love about them, and you can hold this to heart, is – you know, one thing I love about them is they would rather have quality over quantity. And they saw something in you that you showed them and that you're fitting to show the world. And that's a tremendous attribute. I cannot wait until Bellator 185 because I think you're going to shock the world. And I think you're going to amaze a lot of people and make a lot of people proud. On that note, I just truly want to thank you for joining my show. And I look forward to having you back on again in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. And next time, don't be so nervous, okay?
I'll try.
You have a good night, my friend.
You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Christina Warhorse Williams. A little nervous, a little green. Sometimes that happens. You know what? But those sometimes are the best interviews because a year from now, they can look back and listen to the show and see, you know, just how far they've come. I think this young lady is a very unique individual. I watched a lot of footage on her because I really didn't know too much about her, you know, and I think she is going to shock and amaze a lot of people. I think Bellator made the right call on this. I think matching her with Heather Hardy is a tremendous, tremendous fight. I think the fans are going to be pleased. I think it's going to be a great card, you know, but I like the humility that she has. I like that she likes giving back to the youth of America. I like that she likes helping out the inner city youth. You know, like I said, sometimes you get fighters on here, they don't do very much media. I'm not on point tonight, and I'll take the blame for that because I'm in a little bit of pain because of my hamstring, but I think that lady's got a great future ahead of her, and I want to thank her management company, Mikhail and Reese. They truly are changing the sport, and they're bringing on tremendous fighters to TKO, and I'm looking forward to bringing the rest of their fighters on and sharing them with the world as they truly do deserve it. With that being said, we're going to go to the outspoken one, Mr. Joe Riggs.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Well,
62330.
I guess we'll take a quick intermission, and I will call Joe, and we will be right back. And I don't know what I'm about to play, so I apologize for that, as I expected him to answer the phone as we had already talked. But I'll be right back.
Like he laying it down or something.
Don't do that.
Yeah, watching everybody.
That's real.
Look at dirty, I'm telling you, playboy. You gon' do it,
get to it.
Get to it. Trap boys.
What?
Yo,
that's
yo. Name.
Yo, 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 Escalade stupendous, Cadillacs and Benzes, money ain't a thing, I'm off the chain when I spin it, pull up in the truck, automatic start, get it out, hit the strap, 17 shots, tear your club apart, gangsta, stay cheap and banger, strippers on stage, tell them go and get this paper, come about the dawn, this where you belong. Look around the room, you ain't done nothing wrong. Yeah, I rock diamonds out of ragdoll camp. Flossing arm length chains with that platinum stamp. You wanna lamp with Escalade, lay up in the shade. If your ass twerk, then that ass get paid. Girl, you bout these dollars, meet me in the den. Give up all your morals and make these Benjamins. Oh, sin and sin again, so come and bring your friends. And bring the one that's talking about.
Well, let's go ahead and try to give Joe Riggs another call. If not, I'll see if I can go ahead and get Shannon Sin on a little bit earlier.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system, 6233.
Right. You know, one thing I'd like to say is, you know, this is live radio. We do our best to make sure each and every guest shows up on time. I spoke with Joe this afternoon. I confirmed. There is a little bit difference in the time zones. Maybe that's one of the issues. I'm not quite certain what is going on, but I apologize again. I'll take one more brief intermission. I'm going to text Shannon Sin and see if we can go ahead and bring her on just a little bit early. I apologize for that, but it's out of my control, and I want to keep the show going, and I'll try to bring Joe back on at the end of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yo. Damn,
yeah. Haters ain't fond of me, that shit don't bother me. It ain't no stopping me, constantly dodging hypocrisy. I just be flawing so properly, showing the modesty, overly effortless. Flow with a preference, only to show you the regimen. Cope with the specimen. I'm simply a menace, they know that my shine is indefinite. Feed them the flow like it's medicine. Freak with a soul like a benefit. Silence a desolate pessimist. Flow is so holy, turn Muslim to Methodist. I've been so relentless, I've been on a mission. I've been killing shit, but no one seems to get it. I've been dodging drama, trying to find a witness. Watch as I go homicidal on a victim. Young nigga flow so hard, that's what she said. The masterpiece read, you have to be actually rapping. The past is a massive effect, it's match to respect, it pays to be humble. But it's okay to be humble, cause I will blatantly sun you. Don't think I will rage in a rumble. Come through when I blaze like a sun with more tenacious. When I'm scorching stages, I perform and formulate a coronation. I can orchestrate a verbal forestation, then coordinate a true subordination. That means I'm a step ahead, switch flows like a wet the bed. Just pose and I recollect, sit back, kick that, more rounds for your head to flex. Never time to rest. I'm not a fan of civil bars, spit a bar that'll make a rapper quit that's menopause. Get a cure when I spit my sickest shit at 10 or more. I ensure I can make a hearty rapper insecure. I don't give a damn about a mumble rapper, sounding along when I light the torch. I know it's gonna be hard to be humble after your boy blows up and they hate you more. Oh well, let them hate some more, erase the fake, deflate the force. I'll take your place, I'll wage a war, arrange your way to plague a source. Then I waste any taste of joy, you know, there's so many ways I can flow. Yeah, that's why they pay for the flow, they look at me like they just need to go. Shit, but really they just need to go. I'm back to the humble statements before I become the greatest. I know that they feel my potential, that's why I use all the hate as my motivation.
Well, no luck there, so I guess you're going to get stuck listening to me for a half an hour. I'm going to give Joe one more call, and if he doesn't answer, then I guess you're stuck listening to me for another 20 minutes. Well, here we go.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 6233084244 is not...
That's the joy of doing live radio. You always don't get to have a perfect show, and fighters don't always show up because they forget about times. And we remind them, and we try to do the best we can. I guess we'll just have to wait another 20 minutes. There's a couple things that I kind of want to touch on. You know, this the syndication deal that we've got going with iHeart and Univision and iTunes is getting ready to take off. It's going to be a tremendous day for the show, and of course we won't be having these technical difficulties on the show because we'll be having a complete staff behind us. Up to this point, it's truly just been me and a couple other individuals that have been making everything work, you know, and when we have issues like this, the only thing I can do is keep the show going, because I can't sit there with a half an hour of dead air time. You know, one thing I do want to touch on is, you know, doing this show, I started this show with the foundation and the basis and the thought of giving back to the fighters and giving back to the sport that truly helped bless me and put a roof over my head. And with that being said, you know, then the syndication deal came with not one, but three different companies, and I felt that I would be selling out. I felt that I was going to be giving, you know, a bad name to my show. I didn't want to take any money for doing the show, and, you know, the more and more I pushed the contract away, the more they kept coming back at me with a better deal, and the more stipulations I added to it, the more they came back. And then a buddy hit me and he said, "Don, it's not selling out. What you're doing is you're taking the show and, you know, from a fighter's voice, and you're going to give them a roar." And so with that being said, I decided to go ahead and move ahead with the syndication deal. And now, you know, we have projected 100,000 live listens per show on this network, and jumping over to iHeart and all the other, you know, media outlets, there's going to be up to 30 million listeners. And, you know, as we heard with Christina Williams, you know, you put yourself in those situations and you kind of get scared. I'll be the first one to admit that, you know, jumping into a syndicated deal is going to scare the crap out of me, because, you know, even though the show stays in its entirety, except for people, you know, running things behind the scenes for me, you know, the show will stay in its entirety, but I will admit, I am just a little scared shitless, you know, because of things like this that just happened tonight. You know, you can never control what's going to happen, and, you know, those type of scenarios get played out time and time again, and, you know, that's why a lot of people choose to do pre-recorded shows. I would rather have it be live and have technical difficulties, because that's just the way I am. I'd rather have it come from the heart and let it be real. If I'd have known that Joe Riggs was going to flake or get caught doing whatever he's doing, I would have kept the other guest on just a little bit longer and played it out. Yeah, I could pick up the phone and call another fighter and get him on the show, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. You know, I've texted Joe. I've done everything in my power to try to get him on the show. It's kind of teeing me off just a little bit, to be quite honest with you, because I don't like talking. I would rather ask a question than shut the hell up, you know, and see what's happening. But I'm going to give Joe the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to play just another little music timeout, as I took all my commercials off of here because we're getting ready for syndication. I'm going to shoot him a call and see if we can get him on the show for at least 20 minutes for you, and I'll be right back.
Party people, can y'all get funky? So silent folks, can y'all get funky? Don't do you later, can y'all get funky? Yeah, just hit me. Just hit funk.
ball play. I want to free.
Be what you be.
Alright, this show has just completely gone to hell. I'm going to try to give Joe Riggs a call one more time. If that doesn't happen, then I guess we'll talk for 15 minutes.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 6233.
It's not going to happen. I don't know if it's a time zone thing or if he just completely blew off the show. You know, I confirm and reconfirm with each and every one of these fighters multiple times throughout the week, trying to make sure that things happened. I would say I'm sadly disappointed in Joe Riggs. He completely is, with or without intent, has ruined a perfectly good show for me. But, you know, you got to take apples and oranges, and you just got to roll with it. Starting not this Thursday, but next Thursday, me and a constituent from radio that I've been doing radio with for now about 10 years. We're going to be going back to the Legends of Boxing series with John the Iceman Scully. We're going to be bringing him, and we're going to be doing a roundtable forum with legends and champions of boxing each and every Thursday. Starting Thursday of next week, we'll be running a two-hour special show. We're going to be bringing on Angel Manfredi and Iran Barkley, along with John the Iceman Scully and the gentleman that runs the collaboration to help, you know, sustain and fund some of these, you know, legends of boxing that truly don't have the money to do so. You know, as you know, the sport didn't pay, you know, back then what it does now, and you know, a lot of these guys don't have retirement, and so, you know, we're trying to get the names and the word out there for these people needing help in the sport, as they gave us the best of their life, and we're trying to give back to them. You know, like I said, I really don't like to speak, and, you know, by myself, it's kind of a hard thing to do. As I was mentioning with Christina Williams, you can put me in front of a crowd with a mic, and I'll bomb like I'm probably doing right now, but, you know, you got to listen to me for 13 more minutes until we get Shannon Sinn on. I probably won't post this show until I edit it down because I don't like a half an hour of dead air time. But, you know, I do want to take this opportunity to thank Finished MMA with Juan Martinez. You know, he's a gentleman that has truly backed me in life for the last 15 years, you know, and you don't find individuals that truly want you to be you. They want to see you succeed. And with that being said, the United Way Merced jumped into the programming network, and it was a tremendous opportunity for me because I never expected to have such a tremendous organization, you know, jump on board with me. But, you know, they did. And then, you know, Affliction has had my back for just as many years as Juan Martinez. But I added another organization that I truly believed in, and that's the 86ers.net. You know, you look at life, and, you know, a lot of people want to put it in the terminology that you're 86th and, you know, out of the bar, but there's people that are 86th in life. You know, there's people like myself that are handicapped, that, you know, people look at different. They don't give them, you know, equal rights. They don't give them an equal shake in life, and they won't, you know, I guess the best way to put it, like the kid that's last picked to play on the basketball team or participate in a school sport or things of that nature. And they wanted to make an organization that realized that there were people out there that were truly being neglected as far as having places to go and abilities in life based on them being handicapped, based on the way they looked, or, you know, just if they were poor and different aspects. And Alfred and Freddie created this organization, and Stitch and several other, you know, greats in the sport jumped on and helped them, as they all believe in giving back to their communities. And they're a tremendous organization in that right. And one day, you know, I was speaking with Alfred, and I got the opportunity to become a part of this organization, and it was truly a humbling day for me because, honestly, I don't know why the 86ers signed me. And I had a phone call with Stitch, and I said, you know, bro, I know you had a lot to do with this. And he said, no, I really didn't. I only had a little bit. He said, when you look at life, and he says, Don, there must be five of you because you're everywhere. Well, I can't be that person anymore because, you know, it just seems like after the first surgery I had, probably about 4 or 5 months ago, it's been kind of hard getting back on track. You know, I've been dealing with multiple things. And then, like I said, now, last week I fell. I tore my hamstring. I tore the tendon. I've got some separation from the bone. Now I'm going to have to meet up with a surgeon and get that fixed. It just seems like one thing after another. But, you know, I've always believed that no matter what, the show must go on, whether it's from a hospital bed or where it may be. You know, we've got to make, you know, the fighters shine. We got to give back to the sport the way it was meant to be. So I apologize for this 30 minutes of dead air or me rambling on this evening. You know, my show usually doesn't go like this. I don't know what the situation is with Joe Riggs. I'm not going to condemn him because, you know, we don't know what happens in life. All I know is I confirmed, reconfirmed. My first two guests showed up without a problem, but for some reason, Joe Riggs wasn't able to make it tonight. I have not received a call back from him, which is unlike him, and I hope he's all right, and I hope everything goes well for him. There's not even enough time for me to even get him back on here and give him an interview. As we're running short on time, we're going to be bringing Shannon Sinn on here shortly. You know, I look at that last legacy fight, and there's kind of a situation that I want to talk about. You know, a lot of people had mentioned that their dismay with LFA on bringing Kyle Knobloch as the main event onto that card. You know, I've known Kyle Knobloch a tremendous part of my life. I've known him since he was a young man, and, you know, situations transpire in people's lives, and not everybody knows the full story, and this is where I have a problem with the Internet. You know, people jump onto situations without knowing every detail. And even as far as today, I had a person making, you know, an assumption on a post, and, you know, they said they had a great amount of dismay for LFA bringing Kyle Knobloch onto their, you know, as the main event. You know, I had Pat Miletich on. I talked to Pat Miletich that night at LFA. And I'm for one, I think everybody deserves a second chance in life. And, you know, Kyle had already had the UFC opportunity taken away from him because of the situation. And I just think people are too quick to judge. I think people are too quick to denounce somebody in life because it's the way the Internet has led things and is controlling society. And it's, I don't know, it's disheartening in a lot of aspects. You know, I just think that with the Kyle Knobloch situation, I think everybody should give him a little bit of vindication is the best way to say it. You know, he truly is a tremendous warrior. The situations that occurred happened several years ago, hell, almost 10 years ago. You know, so to bring that back up in his life over and over and over again, I think the individual has paid for it time and time again. You know, one thing that I do want people to know that, you know, Professor James Krause, Zach Cummings, and all of the Glory fam truly believe in this sport. And if you think for one moment that they would bring somebody that truly isn't an attribute to the sport or somebody that they could trust or feel that needs to be part of their family into Glory, you know, like Kyle, then you're sadly mistaken. You know, Kyle is a tremendous individual in life, and I'll probably lose some friends and some listeners and whatever over this, but it goes back to that old saying, you can't judge a book by its cover. You know, the same with Kyle. You can't judge him unless you know him. You can't judge him unless you walk in his shoes or know the whole story. And with that being said, it's just whoever is making these situations blow up and not letting them go, put yourself in them shoes. And if you made a mistake in life, wouldn't you want that second opportunity? So with that being said, you know, I think it's best that you all sit back and take a moment and reflect on that statement and let Kyle fight in the sport. Let him have a second opportunity. He's a tremendous, you know, husband, tremendous. He's got a baby on the way, so he's going to be a tremendous father. And I think he deserves each and every opportunity that he gets. You know, we got Shannon Sinn coming on in about 5 minutes here. I think I'm going to go ahead and try to give her a call a little bit early. And if she doesn't answer, we'll just try back at the scheduled time.
Hi, this is Shannon. Sorry I missed your call. Leave a message and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait another 4 minutes. I'll shoot her another text. You know, I apologize for the show tonight. It's out of my control. Joe Riggs didn't show up. You know, it's an embarrassment to me, to my staff. We'll go ahead and take another quick little music outro and I'll text Shannon and let her know we're ready to bring her on.
Yeah. Said I'm riding around in my side of town. Can't even drive. And I'm chilling with a bad chick. She ain't even mine, So far up on the moon, I ain't even high. I know you're feeling that vibe. 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 This vibe music, don't hate, homie, just nod to it. Aside from the fact they deny the movement, I ain't gotta prove that I'm the flyest nuisance. I supply the blueprints and still find a way to make rhymes abusive. And I'ma stay fly with these fine acoustics. No fear in my mind, cause the vibe is ruthless. I'm riding around with no license. Nah, me no fear, police sirens. Nah, I can't hear over the vibes arising. I'ma keep on riding till it's silent. I don't give a damn cause I'm a tyrant. And I'ma stay on my grind till I'm.
Alright, let's go ahead and I shot her a text. Let's go ahead and see if she answers her phone now. It's 2 minutes till time. And we'll see if we can get her on. My apologies. And I hope. For real?
Hi, this is Shannon. Sorry I missed your call. Leave a message and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks.
Well, this is going tremendous tonight. You know, I'm batting 500 here. I got two guests on, and Joe Riggs didn't show up. Shannon's on mountain time. I told her to be 9 o'clock her time, 10 o'clock my time. Let me see if she's answered her text back, and I apologize to my listeners. This is not how I conduct my show, and, you know, it's time to bring her on, so let's just go ahead and try to give her one more call. I have not received anything back. If she doesn't answer, then I can't change what's the inevitable.
Hi, this is Shannon. Sorry I missed your call. Leave a message and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks.
Well, I think we'll just take another quick intermission and we'll be right back. At this point, I'm kind of getting a little tipsy. But we'll make it happen and we'll bring Shannon on and we'll get her interview going and hopefully we can make everything for the rest of the show work out. We'll be right back.
You all appreciate it. When I was young, me and my mama had beef. 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, I'm scared to go home. I was the fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said cheers with my baby sister. Oh, good.
All right, let's go ahead and try to call Shannon right now.
Hi, this is Shannon. Sorry I missed your call. Leave a message and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks.
I'm about ready just to wrap this show up. Her reminder went off. She's seen it. So let's try it one more time. And if it doesn't happen, I'm just going to wrap this show as I'm not going to waste your time nor anybody else's.
Hi, this is Shannon. Sorry I missed your call. Leave a message and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks.
Wow. I'm starting to get a little teed off here. I sent her another text. There's nothing I can really do about it. It's kind of making me a little upset that it's a waste of your time, a waste of my time, a waste of everybody's time when upset, to be quite honest with you. I'll text her again and we'll see what happens. I'm not happy. I will try it one more time and that is all I will do.
Hi, this is Shannon. Sorry I missed your call. Leave a message.
Well, I batted a total of 500 tonight. It's a damn shame that Derek Brennan and Christina Williams were able to show up, and I can't get a response from people that have shared the show, set reminders for the show. Just out of curiosity, I will take another music break and then bring her back on. We're running out of time. I apologize to my listeners. I am not going to probably keep this episode as it is getting to be a joke. We'll be right back.
Oh, yes! Yes! Step on up, shot! Come on, that's good! You got to hold on to that fury!
Yo, yo, yo. One for the paper. One for the paper, two for the show. Three for those who can't comprehend my flow. Four for the hustle, five for the grind. Six for the struggle, it's my time to shine. One time for your mind, of course. I'm ready to blow, can't reach my quota. My thoughts deeper, my heart's colder, so is my shoulder blade. Really, we seeking this false freedom, we are heathens, whether you like it or not. My advice to the preachers, get right what you got. Cause that hypocritical thinking will leave you speechless, more susceptible to weakness. My mind analyzes dialect of fright.
I apologize. I'm going to try to call her one more time, and after that, I'm done.
Hi, this is Shannon. Sorry I missed your call. Leave a message and I'll get back to you soon.
Well, I will thank Derek Brennan and Christina Warhorse Williams. As far as Shannon Sin and Joe Riggs, I don't know what to say. I'm not going to, you know, I'm a little upset. Here we are 6 minutes into Shannon's interview and Joe Riggs didn't show up. To me, it's a little disrespectful. But I don't know the situation. So on that note, I'm just going to go ahead and end this show. I'm not happy with it. I apologize to my listeners. This is not the way I conduct my show. Not happy at all. Matter of fact, just to be on the benefit of the doubt, I will try Shannon one more time. And if she doesn't answer, we'll just go ahead and conclude this episode.
Hi, this is Shannon. Sorry I missed your call.
Thank you to my sponsors, Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, Affliction, the United Way Merced, the 86ers. On that note, I'm not a very happy camper. If I can get up and do the show with a torn hamstring and tendon, all you got to do is pick up the phone. I want to thank Derek Brennan from Factory X and America Top Team. I want to thank Christina Warhorse Williams, set to make her Bellator debut. From TKO Combat Sports, two tremendous athletes. At least they made the show. I'm not happy with the show, so I probably will delete this episode. On that note, have a good night, and God bless.